Welcome to Roadcase, the podcast that explores the live music experience. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Josh Rosenberg, and I'll be taking you on a journey through in-depth interviews with performers and key people in the industry to explore the magic of live music, how it can be totally transformative for both fans and performers, and we'll look at how they take it all out on the road. It's going to be a great ride, so here we go. Okay, welcome back to Roadcase, everybody. This is your host, Josh Rosenberg. I'm so psyched to be here and so glad to have you along for this episode of Roadcase that features my interview with Duran Jones. So psyched to have you all here. If you're a first-time listener and first-time here at a Roadcase, welcome. If you're a returning and repeat listener, thanks so much for your support. I'm so happy to have you back. There's a number of different ways you can get involved in the Roadcase community. You can follow us on the socials. We're at Roadcase Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you have any questions, you can email us at info@roadcasepod.com. Love to hear what you have to say. You can also find out more information about Roadcase by visiting our website. We're at roadcasepod.com. And of course, a great way to help support Roadcase is to follow us on your streaming platform. You can do that on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. On Spotify, click that box that says follow on Apple Podcasts. There's a check mark up in the upper right-hand corner. And while you're there, rating and reviewing Roadcase is a great way to help show your support for this podcast. And on Spotify, you do that from the Spotify homepage, of course. And at Apple Podcasts, just scroll up a little bit. There's some stars and a place to write a review. Really helpful if you can do that. Thanks to all of you that have done so. And really glad you're along for this one. Duran Jones, really enjoyed having this conversation with Duran. He is of the Indications, his buddies that he met at at Indiana University, Aaron Frazier and Blake Ryan, back when he went up to Indiana University in 2012 from his hometown of Hillaryville in Louisiana, where he grew up. His recent album is just extraordinary. It's his first solo effort, entitled Wait Till I Get Over. I just really love that album. Deals with so many deeply personal themes that he wanted to say in a solo project. And I really, really respect that and love that for him. Like I said, he was up in Indiana University, spent quite a bit of time in New Orleans as well, and now lives in Baton Rouge. In this album, he's really searching for his roots, talking about how he grew up, going to church and playing in the fields there, struggling with his sexual preference issues and those type of things that we get into quite a bit. I didn't quite know what to expect from Duran, but I got to tell you, we really clicked in this interview and had just a really terrific conversation. I would have thought he was like a super, I didn't know him. I would have thought he was a super serious human. I mean, he is, but boy, what a great conversationalist. We had some laughs. We had fun. Yeah, you're just going to learn all sorts of things about Duran from this conversation, namely that he is just an absolutely personable and human and just a joy to listen to talk. The Indications have four albums. Their most recent one is Private Space from 2021. I was lucky enough to see Duran with the Indications back in 2021 when they opened for My Morning Jacket during that fall tour of that year. But this solo album, he's super excited to have done this on his own. He's just said there were so many things that he wanted to say, and he wanted to say it, go off on his own and have his own journey and say these very, very important things. He felt like this was his destiny to do so. He talked about how he was kind of just a young and angsty kid, and these songs sort of in the soul and R&B and jazzy vibe really get that point across, and it's really just beautiful stuff. Please go check it out. You can find out more information on Duran's website with this new solo album, Wait Till I Get Over. So glad to have you all along for this conversation I had with Duran. Thanks again for being here, and I want to send a special shout out and thank you to Duran Jones for being here on this episode of Roadcase. And here we go. Hey
Hey, Durant.
Hey, Ben. How you doing?
Good to see you, man.
Good to see you, too.
Yeah. We're just trying to figure... It's always a technology, man. Technology is just fun, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
But
I'm,
wait.
I'm too country for it.
Come on, now. Now, this album I read, you recorded your own parts in this album. You did, your own choir at one point in this album. Now you're fooling me, telling me you don't know what you're doing. Come on, I think you're sandbagging, man.
No, I'm serious, dog. I really don't. And, whenever I did that recording, I meant to do it as a demo. When I do recordings, mm-hmm. I do little demos and stuff, just to show my idea to someone who can realize the vision and make it so much better.
So you're not one of those that are just lowballing the target just to make me feel better or something. You seem like one of those nice type of guys.
I'm dead serious though.
I believe you. And I'm just fucking
For real though. I brought that demo of Wait Till I Get Over to the studio. Mm-hmm. And I told them that I had in mind to use a choir, and they was like, no, this is good enough. And I was like, are you sure? And then it's like, yeah, this is good. This is good.
Oh, so you did that as a demo. Oh, okay. So you set it up. So to explain to listeners, and it's fascinating, right? You were in a room. Tell me about how you created that demo then that made the album.
So, yeah, I basically used what I'm using right now. Mm-hmm. Not this mic, though. I just used a SM58 or something really simple.
Yeah.
I just set it up. And huge shout out to Crystal Warren, singer-songwriter Crystal with a K, because mm-hmm. I had the song in my head for 10 years, mm-hmm. but I didn't know how I was going to record it or how to even make a demo of it. Mm. But I heard that she did something a little similar on one of her records where she had a choir and she did all the voices and she just set a mic in one spot and she just stood in each place and sang all the parts around the mic. Like she was each person. And so I was like, I'm going to do that and try to emulate all these people that I used to hear in church, And so that was my goal. That was my plan.
It's amazing, but that's such a cool concept that you did that. And then they took it and put it on the album instead.
Yeah, dog. Yeah. I'm really thankful.
There's so many parts of this new album that are insanely authentic.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Not only from a techno standpoint, I wasn't even going on the road on the tech perspective, just so many other things. But where are you right now? Are you're in Louisiana?
I am. I'm in Louisiana. I'm in Baton Rouge.
Okay.
I just moved here. This is my new place. It's coming along.
The one room that I can see looks spectacular.
I got my little plants and shit. I'm like working. It's a work in progress.
Yeah, you said you're still in boxes or something, right?
Yep, I'm still in boxes. I haven't even packed all my clothes out of the suitcases or taken them out of suitcases. I just got a piano yesterday.
I'm looking
at it right now. It's beautiful. Her name is Phyllis Felicia Felatio Verline. Yes.
Oh, my God. Okay. We're going to get into that, too, later on. Right? But you grew up in the middle. You grew up in Hillaryville, right? So you decided to
go
north. That was a decision not to move back to NOLA?
It was a very intentional decision to not move back to New Orleans because, the more I travel around the world and meet people who are fascinated that I'm from this area, mm-hmm. it's almost like Louisiana is synonymous to New Orleans, not vice versa.
Yeah.
It's almost like people think Louisiana is just this one huge New Orleans, but there's so many other different intricacies and different types of there's just so many subtle and different types of places, regions, people, cultures around here. And so I lived in New Orleans before and I absolutely loved it back in 2015.
Yeah.
But I wanted to be in Baton Rouge this time around.
Do you feel ever like it's just gotta be a lot of sensory input in New Orleans, especially you know, producing music, right? I mean, but well, that said, so many people live in New Orleans and thrive there and get off on it and do that. Do you, are you one that likes to be kind of in a more of a naive kind of situation where you're not, you take yourself out of the hustle and bustle?
I absolutely love New Orleans. You know, that's the place I was born. Yeah. And that's where my body will lay when I die. You know, like just straight up. I really do feel like, especially if you are clairvoyant or have some sort of spiritual awareness, you feel it in the air in New Orleans.
Right.
It is thick. It's thick in the air, you know, like, and I love that kind of shit. Like that is magical to me. Like, I really had a good time while I was out of New Orleans, but I know that there's more of Louisiana that I need to discover. Like I'm giving myself this goal this year. I'm going to learn me some Cajun French. I'm going to work with some Zydeco, some Cajun French musicians. I want to discover what's happening up north in Louisiana where the Serratones are. Cause you know, they're doing some really cool shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I just want to discover.
What's her name? I had her on the show.
I know you. I don't know her name. I don't.
Jeez, I thought you were going to bail me out, Duran. Thanks a lot. Just, I thought you were a friend.
I'm sorry, bro. I'm just a fan. You know, like I haven't met them personally yet. So, but that's my goal this year. It's just like to go all around Louisiana and like work and collaborate with all these different types of musicians, not just the New Orleans ones. Those two. But yeah,
you're branching out. I mean, pretty soon then you'll just get on a boat and come up the river and be in Chicago at some point. Ooh, make your way up.
A boat tour, bro.
Yeah.
Going up the Mississippi. That's a good idea, bro.
Yeah. Well, I'm in Chicago. I've never done that, but now that I'm thinking about it, that would be fun. Holy shit. I mean, I don't know how fun. I mean, it would depend on who would be on the boat, but that is a journey down to the heart of music, really, past Memphis.
Yeah. And,
wow. St. Louis, yeah, seriously. Memphis, New Orleans.
Yeah.
My middle one, she's 21. She's in Tulane. So I've spent some, you know, a good amount of time in New Orleans recently, which has been nice.
Kudos to her because I could not go to college in New Orleans.
I would
flunk out the first semester, bro.
Oh my God. And she's getting like fucking straight A's. I don't know how she's doing it, man.
You're a good dad. That y'all raised the right. Y'all raised a good one.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's not because
she doesn't party, let me tell you that.
I would have been calling collect from Jefferson Parish Police. Dad, come bail me out, bro.
What is it about that feeling in the air there? You mentioned that. Take your sip, man. I don't know. What are you drinking?
Oh, this is a little orange juice.
Yeah. Oh, that's your breakfast this morning. You asked me what you were asking me what I had for breakfast this morning, and I was like,
yes.
That was before we set up the mics, and I'm like, what's up with that? No one's ever asked me that question,
dude.
In the context of the show, that is.
Anytime I'm on the road and I get to a venue, and you know, like tech people be grumpy as hell, like, oh, don't want to be here. I was up 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, like
right.
All that kind of shit. You know, I just ask that simple question. Hey man, what you have for breakfast today?
Right.
And it breaks everybody down. Like the most pissy person. You just ask them.
Really? I'm gonna try that.
What you have for breakfast today? And they'd be like, what? A muffin? Why are you asking me that? I'm like, just because.
That's exactly what I said when you asked me that.
Dude, it's the best icebreaker. It really is.
I'm gonna try.
That's my little secret, everybody.
I thought maybe it's because you had some magnificent breakfast and you wanted to brag about it. But instead, when I asked you back, of course, I had oatmeal with strawberries, walnuts, and then I put half and half in it. That's the secret.
Ooh.
And then
bougie. Okay.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Like, I just like, I'm getting too old to like go skim milk. Like, fuck that shit, man. I want whole milk and or half and half. Like,
Live it up, baby.
I don't really need to worry. I don't drink a lot of milk. I don't have to like worry about the fat content in my whole milk. But then you didn't have any breakfast. I thought like you were doing it because you wanted to brag about some insane omelet that you made for yourself this morning.
I'm not really a breakfast person. No, I'm not a breakfast person.
I totally am. I get up, I try to vary it every morning, and I'm like, I don't know, I can't get going unless I have a decent breakfast.
Right up.
But yeah, New Orleans, the spirituality, the feeling in the air, you said that that was very, it weighed on you. What is that thing that's going on down there? There's so much going on, but the one thing you mentioned in particular.
Man, I hope one day that I will discover the answer to this question. but man, just something about that place. I think that it's just like a collision of so many different things and different people and customs and traditions and just all hodgepodge together, like, you know, makes it somewhat chaotic, but that's where like the beauty and creation comes.
Yeah.
That's like how the birth of jazz was made, you know, which set precedent for everything to progress in American music. But, and you know, as a kid, it used to scare me, just like how, I don't know how thick the air is there. And I don't know, you just feel like.
There's so many, like, there's also like neighborhood cemeteries, which were always spooky too.
Yeah. Right?
That's like so weird. They're beautiful and hopefully they're above the waterline. But although that's a thing too, during Jesus Christ, floods, fuck. Well, that's very morbid and weird, but, but yeah, there's so much in the air there. There really is. I've just started to learn about it, from a real sense, just being down there and walking around and riding my bike around there. And yeah, it's an amazing place, and so much incredible music has come out of there, man. Wow.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. Super inspiring.
Yeah. But you were born there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Earl K. Long Hospital. No
idea.
I take that back. Nope. Charity Hospital.
Okay.
Earl K. Long was in Baton Rouge. Charity Hospital.
I can't talk parishes and the numbers. I have no idea. I have no. I kind of have a good idea where things are there, sort of. I do know. Anytime I get into a cab there or an Uber, it's always a long musical conversation that ends with like some guy who took me out to a brewery, the Faubourg Brewery or something outside of New Orleans for a festival during Jazz Fest. It was like a little small little 2-day thing that in between the music, in between the weekends, ended up he knew like so many different people and knew like one of the Nevilles, he knew Cyril, and they're telling me about it, Irma Thomas and his friend. I don't know if he's bullshitting or not. He's bullshitting. He's a goddamn good storyteller, but I bought it all, man. And it's just like so many connections and this, that sort of personal kind of very, it's a city that really embraces you from so many different angles.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. But you're talking about wanting to get out of that and being in Louisiana, but you grew up, in between New Orleans and Baton Rouge and Hillaryville, which I wanted to look it up and see where it was. It's almost like halfway between New Orleans and Baton Rouge.
Yep. Right on the river.
Tell me about that growing up there.
Growing up there, man, it was very special. And I didn't realize it back then, but now when I go back and visit home, Hillaryville is almost like a shell of itself now. Back when I was growing up, we still had cowboys. We had, you know, folks that would do trail rides and, you know, ride the horses on down. And there was all these things that we could do as kids, you know. There was all these extracurricular things, even though some of the businesses were shut down, 'cause by the time I was growing up in Hillaryville, the war on drugs kind of made its way to the rural South and the crack epidemic started to make its way through. So when I was growing up, I started to see like the decline or the start of the death of Hillaryville. But it was still beautiful, man, you know, like, and the more and more I travel around the world and talk to folks, I start to realize that like, growing up in the rural South was a very unique experience within itself.
Yeah.
You know, getting lost in the woods for hours with friends or going behind the levee and spending time by the river or even go and play hide and go seek in the sugarcane fields, or being chased by horses, or making cows angry in the fields. All these random
sounds, you know, like you're breaking into people's farms is what it sounds like.
Oh man, yeah we used to go pick blackberries and stuff in like little cow pastures and horse fields and stuff.
Yeah,
you know, just country shit, man. It was really great way to grow up.
Well, not only that, I mean, you had family there, right? I mean, you had your whole family, even, you know, yeah, your grandparents, grandmother, mom, yeah, and dad too lived there.
My dad and my mom started together, and then my mom left. She wasn't really present in my life and my siblings' lives. She had some mental health issues and some addiction issues that, you know, I think she's still battling to this day. God rest her soul. I love her, but you know, I come to realize, especially meeting her later in my life, that yeah, she's my mom, but she's not my mom. You know, it took a village to raise me, and I have several other moms out there. Y'all know who y'all are. I love you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, fortunately, there's so many people with great hearts, and that, you know, like Allison Russell was saying, you know, there's the family you were born into, and there's your chosen family. And it's really, yes, about the chosen family.
Shout out to Allison for the
Shout
Grammy
out
win.
To Allie. She's amazing. Woo! Yeah.
Yes.
I just had her on the show a couple weeks ago. And just before the Grammys, it was phenomenal. She's just so wonderful. We could spend a whole episode just talking.
Beautiful spirit.
Singing her praises. Amazing. Beautiful amazing spirit. Album, The Returner, is just,
yes,
incredible. But yeah, chosen family, man, that's what it, you know, that's what it takes. I'm so glad that you had other people that were able to step into that role. Who was that for you?
Oh, man, it was my grandmother. It was my stepmother, Penny Jones. It was my Auntie Mary. It was several women in church who saw the talent, the young, raw talent within me, mm-hmm, and wanted to, you know, like uplift me and like help me get to where I am. You know, it was mentors in college.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was a lady, Abagunde, who I met on a bus, who just walked up to me and was like, "You look like my nephew. Are you from Nigeria?" You know, like, and still to this day, I will visit her, and we will go, and she will cook a meal, and we will have great conversation, and she gives me the best hugs. You know, like, that's it really, awesome. It really took a village, honestly. To
how old were you when you met this woman in particular?
Abagunde, I met her when I was 22, 23 years old.
Okay. So when you were coming back to in Hillaryville?
No, I was actually in Indiana.
In Indiana. Okay. Mm-hmm. We haven't got to that part of the story yet. Yeah.
But I know.
We got a long journey, Duran. No.
I'm ready, baby.
But you have such a beautiful soul, man. I mean, who wouldn't want to take you in and give you a hug and, like, you know, and that's just that's wonderful. I know. I can almost feel that you can draw those people into your life. Is that, am I wrong?
You know, a good friend of mine told me that people attract, you know, and I always just want to attract folks with good intentions and good spirits, mm-hmm, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So growing up there was tough from that perspective, but musically, what was that like? Was your family musical? How do you come about this? And you spent some time in church as well?
Yeah, my family was kind of musical.
Yeah.
You know, like, but it was like hobbies in a way. Mm. And if any of them listen to this, I don't mean that in a negative way, but you know, I had some cousins who were in like marching band in high school. I had a cousin who did a little bit of music in college, you know. But yeah, like, I felt like, you know, I guess within my generation, because those cousins were a little bit older than me, but within my generation of the family, I was the only one who was really doing music or anything along those lines. And I knew whenever I was a kid, like when I was like 5 years old, that this is what I wanted to do.
Since you were five. Wow.
Yeah, dog, for real. I just had that feeling within within my heart. Back then when I was five, I thought I was going to play cymbals, you know, something ridiculous. You
just
know, I
make just as loved, much, as much noise seeing, as you could.
Yeah, I love seeing the dudes with the cymbals. I was like, I want to
do spinning them on his hands.
That's what I want to do. Yeah.
Right, right. So wait, you knew that you wanted, well, what did you know? What was in your head? What was that thing that you wanted to do? That's pretty young. I mean, did you see, were you watching TV? Were you listening to the radio? Were you hearing performers? What was that? What was that thing out there that you thought you wanted to be that was musical?
I knew that I wanted to be a musician. Like mm-hmm. I wanted to perform, you know, and I had all these dreams in my head. Like I would, you know, like I can remember being like 12 years old and just like closing my eyes and dreaming of being in front of a crowd of 10,000 people or an arena or, you know, an amphitheater or something and singing and playing saxophone. It's just, it was something that I felt like it was a part of my destiny, you know?
Mm. And well, you weren't wrong.
Yo, hey, I was very just like, this is it, you know, like, this is the path. This is where I'm going. And, you know, through that, I really felt like I learned my purpose, you know, through music, which I really do feel like it is to heal people through music. But yeah, that it feels awesome and assuring and affirming to know that, you know, if I give to music, music will give back to me.
Did you have that sense of music as a healing power early on when you were young?
Yes, definitely.
Uh-huh.
There's this meme out there where it's like this little black kid and he's like, "Mom and Dad, I'm depressed." And the response is, "You better go depress them dishes."
You depress know, them but into that the was, sink. Yeah.
But yo, for real, like that was kind of the household, you know, and
oh, so people were like fucking with you. Your family was like, what are you doing? Goddamn.
Oh, yeah.
What the fuck is going on? Right. Like, then this kid's always singing and messing around. What are you doing?
Bruh. Yes. Yeah. There were times where they would, and I get it. I totally get it because it is aggravating. It is vexing. But they would just be like, enough. We've heard enough of you singing today. Like, enough.
Shut the fuck you up know? And do the dishes.
Hell yeah.
No, but like,
I was depressed and stuff, but music really saved me, man. It really like, and that's so cliche to say, but a young, depressed, little angsty teenager, you know, mm-hmm. he might be having some bad thoughts in his brain. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, just hearing a song that, you know, said that could, I guess, emote something like, yeah, everything's not okay and life does suck.
Yeah.
Felt so empathetic to me and I guess made me want to stay here and be a musician.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the important fact. One of the factors there is having a family that knows about the music business or something that could have just been completely foreign to your family, obviously. So like you singing, it was kind of the hobby. That's what you started out saying. They were sort of hobbyists or whatever. Kind of having some context on that now makes a lot of sense as well.
Yeah.
But you talked about bad thoughts. So like sexual orientation wise, yeah, identity definitely. Wise.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, just for some context, you are gay, black man, bisexual, queer. I don't know what nomenclature works best for you.
I would identify myself as queer, you uh-huh. know. Uh-huh. I guess I would, you know, I love dating women. I love dating men. I've never dated a trans person before, but mm-hmm. I consider it, you know.
Yeah, it's a spectrum, man.
Yeah, you know, for me... I was talking to someone about this a while ago,
mm-hmm.
and I would like to call myself this, but it's not the case all the time. But I would like to call myself a sapiosexual, and that's mm-hmm. someone who's like really attracted by the brilliance of someone. But I will say that I have fallen for some stupid ass people too. So, you know. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I don't think it means like sapiosexual. I always took to mean just be attracted to humans and the brilliance of the human, just the human mind, regardless of what form that comes in. Right? It's like I love anybody that is like basically saying I love anybody that I might be interested in. It's sort of that it feels very very 2020s. It's very fair. I mean, I think that's kind of like, you know, when you say I love my fellow people, like, what are you saying? Only if their sexual orientation meets with your whatever your fucking standards are? No, I guess. I don't know.
Right.
No?
You know, I've been putting myself out there on these little dating apps. Yeah. And everything's about preference. And it's like, I don't have a preference. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just want to... That's really, you know, that's really, really vague of me to say that I don't have a preference, because, you know, everyone does kind of sort of. But I don't want to like stick to that, because maybe I might be missing out on something.
Yeah, you don't want to. Maybe you're saying you don't want to exclude a particular genre of people right off the bat. You want to get to know people. You love people, it sounds like. And you want to get to know people and then go from there.
Yeah.
I think that's a great way of thinking about it.
Fingers crossed. Hopefully I find my little boo thing this year. I'm waiting on you, baby. Well, call me, DM me, baby.
You put it out there, man. Wait till I get over. Get over what? Am I missing something there?
Wait till I get over to the other side. Okay. To me, this project was... I got really close to the Mississippi River doing this project. And there was all this talk, like, before America was a country, before the European settlers came, in my area of where I was raised in Hillaryville, there were natives out there, indigenous folks.
Yeah.
And there were talks of like the warriors sometime as a trial of their strength, they would swim across the Mississippi River. And I just wondered, like, what would that be for me? And I, because, you know, I'm definitely not fucking swimming across the goddamn Mississippi River.
No.
Hell no, baby.
Did you know people that would? Can you?
I remember being a kid and this one man saying that he did it, but I don't believe him.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about it. All right, I don't want to get off too much in that tangent, but it's just kind of cool to think about people trying to go across, because it's a major current, I guess, right?
Yes.
Yeah, anyway.
But symbolically, this record is me crossing the river and seeing, you know, what's on the other side. Like, it will there be a transformation? Will there be an elevation? Will there be some manifestation of what I dreamed and envisioned for myself? And
That's really beautiful. That's really beautiful. Like, not only a lot of folks would, or a lot of artists would, like, get to the other side and then write about it, but you are celebrating that moment between figuring it out and, but seeing out there on the horizon where you want to be, and celebrating the beauty that is that kind of in between world. Is that fair?
Yes. Oh, yes, like the process.
I like that a lot. It's a fucking process, man.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Shit, I fucking like that, Duran.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And so this seems like it's an important album. I mean, you went up to IU with the and met your pals, the Indications, who became the Indications, right? It's kind of like an essential trio. And who are your bandmates? Is that Alex Fraser?
Aaron Fraser.
Aaron Fraser. Yeah. Okay, I should know that, because that's my mom's maiden name. He's not Jewish. Is he Jewish?
He is, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
My Italian.
Mom, Italian Jewish. Yeah. I'm not Italian, but I'm Jewish. But I speak Italian, and I think in my mind like I'm Italian Jewish. So, because I love Italy. But you met those guys up there, and I wrote it down somewhere. Blake,
Blake Ryan.
There it is.
Yeah,
Blake
Ryan. That's my home dog.
So you went up there, you did the thing with these guys and then you're coming back. I'm just kind of big picturing it just to kind of give some context. But now with this solo album, you know, this concept, this where you're at, you mentioned you wanting to say, tell me what it means to you to be able to get out there and say things. And why hadn't you been able to say them before in the context of your work with your band, with the Indications?
Word up. This is a really good question. You know, it was really important for me to do this record, but I really wanted to wait and take some time. Chris Swanson, the owner of Dead Oceans, good friend. He told me something that really stuck in my head. He said that like a chapter of a band's life, it's roughly about three records, you know, and I really wanted to focus my time and really dedicate, you know, hard to three records with the Indications. And once I was done, I really felt like, okay, I put this stuff out here, you know, but people know me, you know, I'm traveling the world and people know me, they recognize me, but they don't really know me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think it's time to show people, you know, all of who I am, even, you know, my family. And I look at someone like James Baldwin, who I feel like is a mentor on the other side for me. Mm-hmm. He really comes in sometimes and like speaks to me. Maybe I'm like a fucking madman, schizophrenic, crazy, but
that you know, might like, be true, but I don't know.
but you know, like he really reached out to me and told me, you know, like if you want to do anything, any message that you want to convey, no matter to who it is, like use art as the medium, you know, like that's the way to do it. And so, yeah, so like it just felt so right to take a little sabbatical from the Indications and just focus on myself for a little bit and just let people know who I am and where I'm coming from.
Yeah, just on a deeply personal way.
Yes.
You had, because you talked about former romances, yes, kind of internal struggles, trying to get to that other side, that process that we talked about.
Yes.
And it's just such an incredibly beautiful way.
Thank you.
Yeah. And being able to say that clearly really meant a lot for me, just to be able to say that personally. And to be able to take that time, like you're saying, is really, really seems like it was important.
Oh, dude, it was very much so. And, you know, Aaron, he said this to me and it really stuck with me, you know, like there's the Justice League, for example, you know, when they're together, you know, they're fucking shit up, you know, like they're beating all the bad
guys.
Is
this a Marvel reference? Are we doing Marvel references now?
Maybe. Okay, I don't know.
Let's go. Just
but you know, everybody got their own individual storyline too, you know, like, you know, the Avengers, the fucking Justice League, you know, every superhero has their own arc as well. And so this is me.
True, right. This is your backstory.
Yes.
This is your backstory and your front story. This is your whole story. Mm-hmm. Well, although there are artists that do feel that they're able to say the things that they want to say and not uniquely go off and create a solo album, that's fine. I'm just sort of just calling that what it is. And that's one aspect. I think this is really beautiful because it's so deeply personal and you approach it from such an vulnerable way. That it really brings the listener in from that perspective, especially if they dig in and they read what you've said about it or listen to this podcast, for example, get a little bit of background on where you're coming from. But I think it's a really unique work from that standpoint that you really felt like there was something that you had to say. And then let's talk about this video. Let's talk about that feeling for a minute. Okay. Mm-hmm. Can we do that?
Yeah.
I'm going to set the stage.
Let's go, baby.
Gorgeous video. This was clearly about either a romance that you had when you were younger with a young man, and talking about that reuniting kind of present day almost, I feel, Great hat you had on in that video, by the way. I just want to tell you, man, shout out to that hat.
Thank you. It's a Stetson handmade, baby.
I knew it was something cool. Major brim on that hat, dude.
Hey. Yeah. And you know what? I shaved off like a good 2 inches off of that brim because it was wide as hell, bro.
It's wide as it's still wide as hell. I'm not going that wide. That takes some balls to go really that wide on a brim. I got to tell you. Beautiful video. Holy shit. If this doesn't pull at someone's heartstrings, whether you're gay, straight, bi, whatever, man, it is a beautiful story of love. It's touching.
Thank you. You know, when it was all done and they brought the video back to me to watch, you know, I was in a hotel room by myself and, you know, I had a good cry. You know, my heart was beating so fast. You know, I didn't know if I was like, fuck, I don't know if my family's going to disown me when they see this or like, but I was like, this is important. You know, like this is me breaking free. This is what doing this solo record's about. You know, it's not just about putting out the music. It's about, you know, finding a way to heal myself through that.
Because you hadn't told it, you had not come out as it with. No, tell me what that. No, what point are we at there?
I had come out to, you know, like close friends,
right?
But like family, you know, like. Church folks and all that kind of stuff, you know, like,
yeah,
it was very, very normal for me to go to church at home. And the preacher, God bless his soul. I mean, that preacher at that church gave me my very first car when I was 16. He didn't have to do that, you know.
Give your very first what?
My very first car.
Car? He gave you a car?
Like, he gave me a car when I was 16 years old. Like, he was like, you're a good student, you know, you're not.
Yeah.
Messing around here, you know?
Right.
And I was like, whoa. But also at the same time, like, it was very common for him nearly every Sunday to talk about how being gay was wrong, being homosexual, you know, God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, you know, like all of this shit. And every time he would say that, like, my heart would just drop to my stomach. Mm. Yeah. So I was so scared, but. I had nothing to be scared about. You know, people really wrapped their arms around me and embraced me and loved me and just told me the most affirming things.
Yeah.
That made me feel like, you know, I was just like, why did I wait so long?
Yeah, right. I appreciate and respect and honor those that just need to tell the world that no, I'm a particular, this is the whole you, I guess, right? Is that,
yeah,
was that the impact? Like, what was that feeling for you personally to know that other people know who you truly are?
It felt liberating. It was freeing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think the most beautiful part about it was people reaching out to me and telling me like, thank you so much for sharing your story because I've been struggling with my sexuality and, you know, like just seeing you do it in such, you know, seeing you do it just like really gives me the courage, like someone confiding in me like that. Oh, I just want to cry right now. Yeah. It's, I don't know.
To be able to touch people like that is a gift, man. That must make that's in a sense, that's got to kind of make that. I know it's very trite to say, doesn't that make it all worth it? But it becomes very much worth it in that point.
Yeah.
I would imagine, right?
It really does. It really does.
To be out there on the road and performing this album, what was that like to be out there and performing just to kind of take that?
Ooh, dude, absolutely wild.
Yeah.
Everywhere varied. I'm going to be real with you, like,
cause we haven't been real enough yet, Duran.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get real. Now we're getting real, people.
You know, I could be surface level and just tell you about like all the good things, but this was the very first tour where I've gotten heckled.
Shit. Fuck it.
Yeah, dog. I've never gotten what heckled happened? Before, but there were just folks who were just absolutely pissed off that I wasn't with the Indications and they came to my solo show expecting to hear Indication songs. And I'm not going to do Indications.
I would have heckled you for that too. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No, that's uncool. They know what they're in for. Come on.
Yeah. But, you know,
it's not like you said, you know, and the Indications on the fucking promo poster.
I didn't.
Right.
Well, and then, you know, like this is starting to become a mission of mine, because I know maybe other people might be getting screwed by this, but it's totally legal for you to buy a ticket or buy tickets and resell them as something else. So some folks, whoever they were, like, seriously, you really get the middle finger from me. They were buying a huge chunk of my tickets and reselling them on Ticketmasters as Duran Jones and the Indications.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes.
And you feel
and that should
the people
be illegal. But it's not.
Illegal, yeah, unethical and shitty for sure. I don't know how to police that stuff.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, wow. Okay. So you know that was happening to a large extent, and because you got heckled.
Particularly
and you
on
were
the
like,
West Coast.
Oh, yeah. Really? And so you were scratching the surfaces. Why were these, what were the expectations out there? All right. So it wasn't about you coming out or anything. They weren't like, hey, what the fuck? No. That's what I thought this story was going to be about.
No.
I was a little worried. Like, holy shit, what's going on? Oh, this is an interesting ticketing situation, though.
Yeah, for real.
Oh, man. You know, okay.
There's a lot of bullshit that goes into the ticketing situation.
Yeah.
Here in America. And I really do feel like we need some kind of legislation to not only, like, take care of the musician and make sure that they're, you know, receiving, I guess, what they rightfully deserve, but also make sure that, like, the ticket owner, the buyer, the person, you know, like, their money is going, you know, not to some huge corporation and going actually to an artist that they really love and appreciate.
I just had Brando Rich from Cash or Trade. Are you familiar with Cash or Trade? It's a
I'm not, but
it's
I'll take a
face
listen
value
this.
Ticket. No. This is he's a ticketing person. He's a face value ticket exchange app that you can download, or you can go to the website, and just to bring individuals together, people that are selling tickets, people that are buying tickets at face value, they take a percent. The company takes a percentage, but Brando Ridge has founded this company about, I don't know, like 6-7 years ago. It's really successful just to not have to go to StubHubs or the, you know, whatever, the third party ticket sellers to sell your tickets,
yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Not that that particular issue came into play with you. I mean, I think, but that's just another angle of, yeah, the ticketing legislation and, you know, what this is. You know, we talked a lot about upselling ticket, the platinum kind of ticketing and Ticketmaster that allows Ticketmaster to raise the prices, but also bands might benefit from that too. Ultimately, I don't know. I do know that you were incredibly popular on the West Coast. I saw you play with the Indications when you were opening for My Morning Jacket. I think it was, what tour was that? That was like 2021, I think, right? Santa Barbara County Bowl, I saw you. And then Greek Theater, like a couple nights later.
Oh, man.
Do you remember that?
Oh, I will never forget.
I tell you what, you're more popular in San Francisco than you are in Santa Barbara. I will give you that data. Because like in Santa Barbara, people were, you know, it was like, yeah, okay, this is cool. This is great. You know, I had a good time. I was right up front. Bay Area at the Greek? Whoa.
Oh, my gosh, dude. That's... That was the one that I'll never forget.
That's an Indication show, though. I don't want that. This was not solo.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All
right. That's one I'll never forget. That's the of that My Morning Jacket tour. That's the show for me where I was just like, whoa. I can remember because we were covering Dreams during that time. Fleetwood Mac. Yes. And I just remember just putting the mic out. Like when the chorus and the entire Greek dog, like everybody was just singing the chorus.
Oh, that's cool.
And that just felt so dang on awesome, man.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. So cool.
I mean, okay. You're very humble to bring to like to talk about a cover that you did and they love you because of that covers, but that's not actually they may have loved you for that song, dude, but they fucking love that show, man. People were going bonkers up front and for you during that show. You know, you like to come down to the stage, I remember, and just get like really up close with people. It was great. You got a great stage presence. I loved it.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. Why'd you go to IU?
It was like a Cinderella story.
Yeah.
Yeah, dog. I did not, well, I didn't apply for IU. I didn't think I was going to get in. IU is arguably the best music school in the country, one of the best in the world.
No shit.
Yeah, man. Some people like to call it the factory. It's the
Uh-huh.
largest music school in the country, I think.
Uh-huh.
I think there's like over 1,500 undergrad and like somewhere like close to 1,000 graduate students.
Right.
The opera budget there is like $4 million.
Right.
The music library is like second to the Library of Congress. It's the largest music library in the country.
Wow.
Yeah, it's huge, man. But I didn't. I wanted to go there, but I didn't think that I was good enough. I applied to different schools, and then the saxophone teacher there came down to Louisiana and did a residency, and I did some lessons with him. And with my last lesson with him, he was like, "I want you to come to IU." And I was like, "What?" I couldn't believe it, dude. I really couldn't believe it.
Oh, fantastic. Well, he obviously came all the way down to see you, man. There was some interest there.
I
Somebody
guess,
like hooked you up with a scholarship and stuff.
you
It's
know,
fantastic.
yeah.
Were you going there at the same time as like Corey Fry?
I don't
Do you
think
remember
so.
him? Main Squeeze. It's an LA-based band. They're a really dope band.
I knew some folks from the Main Squeeze. Shout out to Rob, their bass player.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, like he and I played in some ensembles together, but I didn't really see a lot of those guys around Bloomington
Yeah.
when they were there. I was really into the books then. I wasn't really going out and about in town.
Oh, into the books from a musical perspective or studying? Did you look? Did you?
Studying.
Yeah. What you did? What was your favorite subject? Would you kind of gravitate to?
Oh man. Dude, I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed like playing in the ensembles. I was in a very good quartet, Canori Quartet, and we won several competitions when I was with them, and they're still going on, and they're, you know, doing amazingly still. I don't know though. You know, I just remember IU being really fucking hard, bro. Like the way I studied in undergrad at Southeastern, I could not study the same way at IU. Like I was like first 2 months I was failing all my tests. It was so hard, but
And
I
you're talking
got there,
about general.
baby.
Do you yeah, good for you, man. You graduated? Do you do
Hell
undergrad?
yeah.
So they brought
Hell
you up
yeah.
there to be in the music school there, but were you taking other classes too and just taking advantage of being there at the university, or was it all about music for you?
Kind of sort of, you know. I did a civil engineering class for the hell of it.
Oh, cool.
Because I'm always like interested in like cities and, you
Yeah.
know, like structures of places. And so yeah, like that was really cool, like seeing that, and especially now that I travel around a bunch and see how like sprawled out America is compared to, I guess, like European countries where, you know, the streets are for the people. You know, you can live in a place like Baton Rouge, let's say like a town the size of Baton Rouge in Germany, you
Yeah.
can walk everywhere you need to go. You can bike everywhere you need to go. That's impossible to do here. Um,
Right. Oh,
so I love that shit. But you know, other than that, I really didn't do anything. I think the most special part about being in Bloomington was really once I got comfortable was getting out into the city and meeting all the musicians and hanging out and collaborating and making art with folks.
yeah. And that's how you met Aaron and Blake.
In a way, yes.
In a way.
Yes. I met Blake in a class that I was AIing, assistant teaching, called IU Soul Review. And from there, we started hanging out, and that's how I met Aaron, and then we started writing songs together.
Oh, cool. Oh, that was like
Yeah.
around what? Like 20, 20, 20, 20.
2012.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Good guess
Wow,
by
so
me.
long ago. Woo!
Yeah, just a mere 12 years ago, man. And then you cats got together and just started to play. And what'd that look like? Like how'd that sort of develop and become the thing that it became?
You know, it started with us just listening to records. They already were in a band. they had a rock and roll band called Charlie Patton's War. They got some really cool videos on YouTube if anybody wants to check them out. But yeah, they already had their band, and it was like a fine-tuned machine. And so, you know, big part of Bloomington's music scene are basement shows. At least that's what it was like when I was in college there. Uh-huh. And they would invite me to come and sing covers with them during the basement shows. They would do mainly their stuff. And then they would be like, hey, we got a friend we want to call up to sing a song with us. He's going to sing some Otis Redding, Get Up for Duran Jones, you know, and I would sing, you know, Dock of the Bay or some shit like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really awesome and really fun.
So that's kind of how it got started.
Yeah.
But your albums reflect this kind of like, I don't know, I'm not going to cat completely like pigeonhole or anything like that, but like this neo soul, neo R&B, but in and of course, in a really super fresh way. There's so many different ways that R&B and soul can go. I love just kind of exploring what's happening now and who's creating that music that really gets to the core, that comes from the South in essence. Which, you, of course, your music does, because that's where you're from, and having been influenced by so many different types of music, but getting into that zone, I think, feel like each one of your albums is almost like encyclopedic, and it's kind of the place where it stands, the references, what it means. Can you talk about that kind of influence and how that sort of guided you kind of going forward?
Yeah, this is really, really, really wonderful stuff. You're really cool, Josh.
Oh, thanks, Duran. I appreciate that. So are you, buddy. I love having you on the show, man. I'm so happy to get you on.
Thank you, Bib.
Yeah. I'm glad you're here, man. I'm glad we're doing this thing.
We finally made it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really feel like that's where IU really comes in the picture of the skills that we developed in IU, because with any record that I've done with the Indications or my record solo wise, like we research heavily, you know, like we make sure that, like, you know, that with every artistic suggestion, there's intention, there's a reference. Mm-hmm. You know, there, you're not just doing it just because you can, but there's a reason. And I really do feel like IU kind of instilled, or at least for me, kind of instilled that within me. But I know it's the same for the guys too, because they're very, very researched bookworm kind of fellows. And we definitely like to dive deep and to gather inspiration from that.
Mm. That having a particular vocabulary.
A particular vocabulary. What do you mean?
Well, a vocabulary of references of where you're coming from, what you're kind of recalling when you're sort of going out and creating your own language.
Yes. Yeah, man. And a big part, you know, I don't know if other bands do this, but I love doing mood boards or some type of, I don't know if it's necessarily would be called a mood board, but just like having visual art for reference, books, certain pages of books, poems, different mediums of art. And of course, music as well. Music that you feel influenced by, or something that you really love the groove of, mm-hmm. or the sounds that they're creating. Mm-hmm. But I really do feel like it's just as important to have other mediums of art as references too. And I like to create a document, you know. In the past, the Indications have done like documents of mood boards, and I kind of like branched off of that with my solo project and expanded it a little bit more and a little bit deeper in a way.
That mood board kind of becomes like more like story or personal story oriented for the solo stuff, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think, right?
Yes.
Are you coming back to the are you coming back after the with the Indications? You guys, I mean, because you guys are friends, right? Like, this is like,
oh yeah,
this is your this solo thing that you're kind of living in for right now, but you're not saying goodbye to your buddies, right?
No. Yeah. I received their blessing when I told them that I wanted to take some time and do a solo thing, and I'm actually working with them right now on a new record that hopefully will be out next year.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm traveling, and when I'm traveling, writing that record with them. But when I'm not doing that, I'll be here working on my next solo record here in Louisiana.
Oh, so it's going to be another solo thing, kind of, because you said next year with Indication. So 20. Now we're talking 2025. I don't think I've said the word 2025 yet.
I know my life
it's
is
only
so crazy.
It's only February of 2024. Don't make me go. Don't throw me too far into the future, Duran. I try to stay just a little kind of close to the here and now sort of, but you know, wait till I get over. So the next one's going to be, I'm there now. What are you feeling?
I feel like the next one's going to be what it's like on the other side. It's going to be a celebration. It's going to be a joyous celebration.
Right. Interesting. Yes.
Yeah.
Did you like contemplate doing that together with the guys?
My next solo record.
Yeah.
With the Indication?
Well, no, I mean, it wouldn't be the next solo one, but it's like, I don't know. Like what point do you say, like, I want to do it with you guys. I don't need to do this on my own anymore. I mean, clearly I know the answer to that, 'cause you already told me, but so.
You know, I was talking with, one of the Indications about this earlier. 'Cause he's contemplating whether or not doing his own solo thing. And the thing about with being with the Indications, it's all compromise. And a big important part about compromising is that nobody wins. Mm-hmm. Nobody wins in a good compromise. If it's a great compromise, absolutely nobody wins. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's really important for all of us to have our own creative expression, to branch out and to do it on our own terms.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
because I know for a fact, like with my solo stuff, I would do stuff that I was like, I know somebody in the Indications wouldn't like this, or they would be like, I don't want to do this way or something, you know, and that's fine. You know, I just really felt like it was important for all of us to have that.
Yeah, totally. That's good within a certain context to have that level of compromise that you need to have if you have other band members. But like,
yeah,
you want to have that. It's freeing to have us kind of 100% control of what you're doing and being able to do that.
Oh my gosh, yes.
You know, that creates longevity for other kind of musical collaborations that you're able to go off and do something that you have complete control over.
Yes.
Right.
Definitely.
Because if you want to assert your own control in a group environment, you're going to fuck up the dynamic.
Yes, indeed, man.
Right.
For real.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah. So I'm really curious, what was the reaction from your family, folks at home, when you kind of came out with the solo, came out in more ways than one to mix, you know, just kind of overuse that metaphor. But what was that kind of coming back? And give me some context on that.
Oh, dude, it was absolutely beautiful. You know, I was terrified for the longest time, but I had nothing to be terrified about or nothing to be afraid about. And, you know, I really felt like everyone was proud. Hillaryville is so small. It's like maybe a town of 500 to 700 people.
Wow.
Yeah. So like, you know, putting the record out, you know, it just spread like wildfire what I was doing.
Right.
And, you know, the homage, you know, to Hillaryville and talking about it in the place. And I just felt the love from Hillaryville, from my hometown, not only from the people on this side, but also the people on the other side, my ancestors. I feel like I get messages from them all the time that I'm doing the right work for the rural South, just to talk about it, just to give it a narrative, because a lot of our little small Black rural towns all throughout the South, they're disappearing. And all these stories, these traditions, these customs, all these things that made it so beautiful for me and others, folks won't be able to experience that no longer.
Yeah, that's that. From a traditional standpoint, I want to say, yeah, that's a shame. Is there any good of it also that people are moving to other places, maybe where there's maybe have a better lifestyle, or is that kind of the wrong way to think about it? I don't know, because there is kind of an evolution of cities. We were talking about civil engineering and looking at different cities and how things just kind of change over a while. Yeah. Is it nostalgia, or is it these places need to be kept in kind of the traditional form when it's also kind of not necessarily economically viable?
Yeah.
It's a hard one.
That's a really big part of it. You know, at one point in time, Hillaryville was a self-sustaining place in a sense. They had their own school, they had a grocery store, they had restaurants, mm-hmm. had a hotel, you know, all these other different things, but all that's gone now.
When things are ravaged by outside influences, like you talked about the influence on war on drugs, and that there was a lot of crack usage or meth usage or what have you, I don't know. That's always a shame when there's outside influences that ruin the vibe and a town and their traditions and come in and like rip apart towns. That happens definitely in so many places in this country.
Definitely. You know, I won't hate on anyone, you know, feeling the need to get the fuck out of the rural South, because I sure felt the need as a, you know, teenage young kid. I couldn't wait to leave. But I realized, you know, upon leaving and meeting other people, just how special it was growing up there and the things that are lost, like the Cajun tattoo or the root worker, or like, you know, the lady who could go to if you were sick and, you know, being out in a rural area, if you were sick and you call 911, it might be 20 minutes, 30 minutes before an ambulance can come and get you. But, you know, that root worker lady, she could go out to a field and pick some herbs and get your fever down or settle you down or whatever the case may be. Or, you know, my grandfather, who would slaughter pigs, which, you know, sorry to the vegetarian folks out there. I'm sorry, Biv. But he would slaughter pigs and, you know, divvy it out to the entire community. You know, everybody gets some, you know, like. Stuff like that was lost, you know, like no one ever thought about picking up the things from the root worker, the chata, or picking up how to slaughter pig from Papa August, or how to make a horse dance the way that Troop could, or how to drive cattle the way he could. Like these are.
It's that tradition. Really it's that tradition and that richness of a small community.
Yeah.
That is just changing in this world.
And it's all lost. And I feel like, you know,
when you go to Europe, there are smaller towns that still have that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, there's a more of a respect for tradition. There's not as much, economic, troubles and diversity. I mean, there are some, I'm generalizing, but I think, you know, when I think about traditional European towns that can keep that tradition, I know it's completely, this could be just a bonkers analogy, but
no, it's not
that there are places with that tradition of hundreds and hundreds of years of people doing the same thing. And it is a shame that it goes away, because like in 100 years, you could come back to Southern rural Louisiana and, you know, I know there are other economics involved, right? Like, I don't know if the sugarcane fields are still being harvested or what have you, and other kind of factors that bring people there and continue to would propagate kind of that still being a viable environment. I you know, it is a shame in a sense that that it just won't continue, but you have memories, and I guess there's certain parts of that that still are around, at least, and maybe just, you know, in people's memory. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm glad that, you know, I was able to document at least a piece of it through a record. So
That's fucking cool, man. Thanks for art. Yeah, no. Thanks for doing that, and what you do, man. That is really beautiful.
Thank you.
Able to like have a piece of, and that like that will not only live on in your memory, but lives forward in a work of art. That's beautiful.
Yes.
Man. Yeah. That's good stuff. For so many different reasons, man.
Wow. Yes, indeed. Yes,
so
indeed.
What about getting out on the road and doing this? You've toured this album. Are you going to go out again with it, or are you hanging out at home for a while? What's up?
Yeah. So I'm going to Willie Nelson's ranch next month.
Oh, shit. I think project. For Luck Reunion.
Luck Reunion. Yes. Will I see you there, baby?
I'm trying to score a VIP ticket there. So I don't, but I'm going to be at South by. So
awesome.
I'll try to connect with you if I do go. Yes. I'll reach out and so we can say hi.
Yeah. Hit up my manager. See if they can hook you up, baby.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll do that. Let me get his name when we're done. But
all right.
Okay. So you're doing that. Yeah. You doing some dates out in Texas too, or what?
No, I'm just going to do that. And then I have a gig in Miami. This is a dream come true. A friend of mine who, I love her so much. She's one of my spiritual guidances. She really helped me like discover a lot more within myself spiritual wise. Went right before I released this record, she made me write three goals on three bay leaves, and she made me put them on a little altar of mine. Yeah,
those are small, so that had to be kind of small goals. I know.
And bro, so one of the goals was to perform with an orchestra and perform this record with an orchestra.
Oh, shit.
And I get to do that in Miami with this ensemble called New Deco. So that's going to be really exciting.
Oh, yeah, I know the New Deco. Who else was I talking to? I talked to a couple artists that had performed with that and did like an album, like got to perform their own albums with that. And so,
yes.
Yeah, fantastic, man.
Super, super excited for
that's
that.
That's killer stuff.
Yeah, and it's crazy because I can't say what it is right now, but it's super exciting. But one of the other things that I wrote on the bay leaf, one of the bay leaves,
right,
is happening. It's totally happening. All so right. Like, dude, I'm like, ugh, but that's all I can say.
Okay. Spoiler alert that there will be something cool out there.
Okay. Be on the lookout, baby. Be on the lookout.
All right, I'm sure it's going to be really awesome. So whatever this announcement is coming out soon?
Hopefully so.
All right, cool. Well, that's so cool. Thanks for being here, Duran. This has been fucking great getting to know you a little bit better and getting to explore this amazing, your amazing latest album, Wait Till I Get Over, your debut solo project. One of two, maybe, right? Coming out with another
one.
Cool. Yep. That'll be fucking great. That's great, man. So yes, great indeed. To meet you. You're such a good dude. Thanks so much for being here, Duran. This has been like huge amount of fun, man. Thanks for being
here. It's really good chatting with you, Josh. And I got to say, your dog back there, it's so cute.
Oh, my dog.
Yeah, oh, my goodness.
Sammy. He likes to sleep on that. It's like that cool part of the fireplace right there, you know, on that tile. Yeah, he's awesome.
I can't wait to have my own pup one day. Oh, man.
Yeah, get a good dog sitter. Research dog sitters first and then get a dog. Mm. If you're going to be a traveling musician. Yes. Or have a partner that stays at home.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yes.
Thanks, Duran.
Thanks, Josh.
Appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks, bro.
Much cheers. Love. Cheers.
Cheers.
Okay, that was me talking to Duran Jones. I just had the best time talking to Duran, and it's so nice to connect with an artist like that. Just great sense of humor, fun, loves to laugh, and we really got into it. It was really great. As you heard, this new album, Wait Till I Get Over, please go listen to it if you haven't already. Just so wonderful. We talked about so many of the stories that he wanted to recount in that solo album that he wanted to
you know, the reason why he wanted to step away from the Indications for a minute to be able to do that on his own. And, you know, I can just sense, and, you know, he confirmed that, like, you know, that was just so important for him to do, and that he just felt a really great sense of satisfaction to be able to do that. And, you know, a couple, he talked about a couple new things coming up, wouldn't disclose those. I have no idea what they are. So I've tried to figure those out since that. Well, you know, I spoke to him just like a couple weeks ago. So just heads up for that. You know, he's going to be at the Luck Reunion outside of Austin on, I believe it's March 14th. I'm going to be going to South by Southwest. So hopefully I'll be able to get out to that Luck Reunion. And, you know, maybe he's got a new solo album coming up, which is sort of what he talked about a little bit. He'll also be at Jazz Fest as well. I think on March 4th, playing a show at the Chickiwawa. I haven't been to that venue, but I heard good things about it. Interesting. He talked about that heckling issue that that seemed to stick out in his mind. I talked to, you know, I wanted him to wanted to talk to him about sort of audience reactions and such. And that was the first thing that he came up with, that people thought they were going to see the Indications, we're just going to see him solo. Who knows? That's just kind of a weird sort of thing that occurred. But clearly it affected him. He talked about his love of New Orleans music and Louisiana music and mentioned the Serotones. And I couldn't remember her name. AJ Haynes is the lead vocalist of the Serotones. I just loved talking to AJ. She was just so much fun to chat with. And I was just so pleased the way that he talked about once, you know, this album was like about him coming out, essentially, especially that song, That Feeling. And, you know, just coming back to his hometown and being nervous about that, seeing people that he had seen for quite a while. But he said that he was actually just really received with love. And that was really wonderful to hear. You know, we talked about the decline of the small towns and rural small towns and where's that tradition going. And, you know, it's sad, but true. But having, you know, Duran using his voice to be able to talk about that and put those issues out there and talk about his love for that town as part of really continuing the tradition in his own way. And that's really wonderful. So make sure to go listen to his new album, Wait Till I Get Over. You can go to Duran's website for more information. So glad I was able to talk to Duran. What a fun time that was. And I really hope that you all learned something more from my conversation with Duran. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, Roadcase Pod, for more information about Roadcase, when new guests are coming up. I'm going to be posting a ton of content from South by Southwest on the next couple of weeks. I think that's the second week of March I'll be headed down there. I'll be seeing some new bands, bands that are new to me as well, and might be do an interview or two while I'm there as well. So heads up for that content coming up. And I got a bunch of great guests on the show and can't wait to share those interviews with all of you fine people coming up soon in the weeks and months ahead. So glad you're here for this one. Thanks again for being here. And I want to send a shout out and a special thank you to Duran Jones for being here on this episode of Roadcase. Thanks again so much for listening. And I'd like to encourage everyone to get involved with Roadcase. You can do so in a number of different ways. You can email me at info@roadcasepod.com with questions, comments, and even suggestions for guests. Or you can follow us on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're at Roadcase Pod. And we have a YouTube channel called Roadcase Podcast. And of course, you can subscribe to this podcast on your favorite listening platform. And if you could please rate and review the podcast while you're there, that would be great. So I want to thank Walzer for this awesome theme music that we have. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to Roadcase. We have a lot of great episodes coming up, so I'll see you on down the road.